4. Christmas Holiday. An Internet Mystery. Alid's Twitter account, @UniverseCity, was something that I used to have open on a tab on my browser at all times. Here are some examples of Alid's tweets from @UniverseCity. Radio, @UniverseCity. The sounds are louder in the dark. Radio, @UniverseCity. I know what your dreams did last summer. Yes, I'm talking to you, Romy. You can't hide anymore. Radio, @UniverseCity. UniverseCity fashion update. Gravel is in. Hobgoblins are out. Make sure you have a hole punch with you always. You have been warned. Radio, @UniverseCity. @NightVale Radio. We are listening. Always listening. These usually made absolutely no sense to me, and that's what I loved about them. Needless to say, I always retweeted them. But after I got to know the person behind the Twitter account, I began to read into Radio's, Alid's, tweets far more than I probably should have done. He tweeted this after his English literature exam. Radio, @UniverseCity. / The alphabet has been compromised. Only 7 letters remain. Save them. He tweeted this one September night at 4 a.m, several hours after he told me he'd argued with his mum. Radio, @UniverseCity. ***. Important. The stars are always on your side. ***. But now that he was at university, Alid's tweets were becoming darker and darker. Radio, @UniverseCity. How many miserable young people does it take to change a light bulb? Please, I am serious. I've been sitting in the dark for 2 weeks. Radio, @UniverseCity. Career options. Metallic dust. The cold vacuum of outer space. Supermarket cashier. Radio, @UniverseCity. Does anyone have any tips for avoiding sinking into the concrete? I suppose he must have been doing it deliberately. UniverseCity was taking a bit of a darker turn anyway. I didn't worry too much about it. Instead, I spent most of our 3-week Christmas holiday re-listening to every single UniverseCity episode in an attempt to work out who February Friday was. But I still had no idea. Alid had actually mentioned several times before that he hadn't seen February Friday for years upon years. So it couldn't be Daniel, really. I'd been wrong. Which was annoying. I hated being wrong. And you know what? When it comes down to it, there's nothing I hate more than an internet mystery. Galaxy ceiling. It was the afternoon of December 21st. And Mum was psyching me up to go and knock on Alid's door. I was doing a little jog on the spot in our porch, and Mum looked down at me, her arms folded. If Carol answers the door, said Mum, don't bring up the following. Politics, school dinners laws, alcohol, and the old lady who works at the post office. What does she have against the old lady who works at the post office? She overcharged her once by accident, and Carol never forgives. Carol never forgets. Of course. And if it's Alid, Mum sighed, don't blather on saying sorry over and over. I think he knows you're sorry since you've said it a billion times already. Thank you, Mother. That's very sensitive of you to say. Going into the marsh gotta be harsh. Great. Mum patted me on the shoulder. It'll be fine. Don't worry. Talking always makes things a little better. I promise, especially in person. I still don't trust you young people and your... what is it? Tumble? Tumblr, Mum. Yes, well, it all sounds a bit dodgy to me. Talking in person is the easiest way forward. Okay. She opened the door and pointed out of it. Go. When Carol last opened the door to her house, it was the first time I had seen her since the hair-cutting incident, which I genuinely still thought about at least once a day. She looked exactly the same. Cropped hair, plump physique, and wide, blank expression. Francis, she said, clearly a little surprised to see me. Everything all right, love? Hi, yeah, I'm really good, thanks, I said, speaking too fast. How are you? Oh, I'm getting along, you know. She smiled and looked into the air above my head. Got a few bits and bobs going on. Being kept busy, bustling about. Oh, I said, trying to sound interested, but not so interested that she would embark on a conversation. Well, I was just wondering whether Alid was in. Her smile dropped. I see. She studied me, as if deciding whether she was going to start shouting at me. No, my love. Sorry, he's still at university. Oh, I shoved my hands into my pockets. Is he coming back for Christmas at all? Well, you should probably ask him yourself, she said, her mouth a thin line. I was terrified by this point, but decided to press on. It's just, he hasn't been answering my texts. I was just, a bit worried about him. I wanted to see if he was okay. Oh, darling, she laughed pityingly. He's just fine, I promise you. He's just a bit busy with all this university work. They really do work him hard up there, as they should. He stayed behind during the holiday because he missed a few deadlines. She shook her head. Silly boy. He was probably out partying instead of doing his work, like he should have been. Partying was the least likely thing for Alid to be doing. But I didn't want to accuse his mum of lying. And, you know, she continued, he's always had some problems with his work ethic. That boy. He's got such potential. He could do a PhD if he put his mind to it. But he's always distracted by his silly little projects and whatnot. Useless stuff. Did you know he used to spend all his time writing some ridiculous story and reading it out on his computer? I don't know where in God's name he got his hands on a microphone. I laughed, even though it wasn't funny. She continued. So silly. This is such a vital stage of your life, you know? You should be 100% focused on your studies. Otherwise, you could ruin your entire life. Yes, I said, forcing the word out. I've always been very supportive of our Alid. But I do worry sometimes. He doesn't have the right attitude, you know? He's an exceptionally bright boy, but he just doesn't utilise that. And I've tried so hard to help him ever since he was a toddler, but he just doesn't listen. He was never as bad as his sister, of course. She laughed, bitterly. Ugh, hateful child. I started to feel very awkward. But she met my eyes with a new excitement. I've been working on a little something since he telephoned me a few weeks back, actually. He was complaining. He was feeling unmotivated about his degree. And, well, I really do think it's to do with the mindset he puts himself in. So, I've been moving a few things around in his bedroom. I did not like the sound of this. You've really got to be in the right place to stay motivated, haven't you? And I really do think his bedroom was one of the main problems. So messy all the time. You remember, don't you? I guess so. Well, I've had a little rearrange, and I think he'll do much better with things like this. She stepped back suddenly. Why don't you come and take a look, darling? I was starting to feel a little ill. Okay, I said, and followed her inside and upstairs towards Alid's bedroom. It's just a few little rearrangements here and there. I'm sure he'll appreciate a change. She opened the door. The first thing that took me aback was how white everything was. Alid's multicoloured duvet and cityscape blanket were gone and had been replaced by plain white and cream striped sheets. The same thing had happened to the curtains. The carpet was the same, but it now had a white rug on it. The fairy lights were tangled up in a cardboard box at the side of the room. All of his stickers had been scraped off his chest of drawers, and there was not a single poster, postcard, ticket, leaflet, flyer, or piece of paper on any of the walls. There were a few of these crumpled up in the same box that the fairy lights were in, but there definitely wasn't everything in there. The houseplants were still there, but they were all dead. The walls were a plain white, and I honestly didn't know if they'd always been like that, or if Carol had painted them. To my horror, the galaxy ceiling had been painted over. Feels very fresh, don't you think? A cleaner, emptier space makes a cleaner, sharper mind. I forced out a yes, but I'm pretty sure it sounded like I was choking. Alid was going to cry when he saw this. She had taken his private space, his home, and destroyed it. She took everything he loved and ruined it. 3:54 a.m. I probably worried my mum quite a bit when I got back to my house with the cardboard box under one arm and the cityscape blanket under the other, blabbering about room decorations. Once I'd finished explaining the situation properly, Mum was making a face of absolute unabashed disgust. She should be ashamed of herself, said Mum. I bet that's why he's still at uni. I bet he thinks he can't come home. He's trapped there. He doesn't have anyone to look after him. I started blabbering again, and Mum made me sit down on the sofa to calm down. She went into the kitchen, made me a hot chocolate, and then sat down next to me. I'm sure he has friends at uni, she said. And there are so many support systems at universities, pastoral tutors and counsellors and anonymous services. I'm sure he's not alone. But what if he is? I whispered, trying not to cry for the billionth time. What if he's suffering? Is there really no way you can contact him? I shook my head. He doesn't answer my texts, or messages, or calls. He lives 6 hours away. I don't even know his address. Mum took a deep breath. Then, I know you're worried, but there's not a lot you can do. This isn't your fault, I promise. But it felt like my fault, just because I knew about it and couldn't do anything to help. It was taking me roughly 3 to 4 hours to actually fall asleep each night by this point. But that night was particularly bad. I didn't want to turn my laptop off because I felt too alone in my bedroom. And I didn't want to turn the lights off because I hated the dark. I couldn't stop thinking. I couldn't turn my brain off. I felt like I was panicking. I was panicking. The last time I failed to help someone in trouble, they ran away and weren't ever heard from again. I couldn't make the same mistake this time. I had to pay attention to what was happening and do something about it. I was scrolling through my Tumblr, looking at all the art I had drawn. I imagined someone deleting it all, smashing up my laptop. Even thinking about it made me angry. I loved my art more than anything. I enjoyed it more than anything. What if someone took that away from me? Like Alid's mum had taken his world away, his tiny little safe place. I scrolled through my phone while huddled up in bed and found Alid's name. The last time I'd called him was in October. One more time couldn't hurt. I clicked on the phone symbol next to his name. The dial tone sounded, and then it didn't. A. Hello? His voice was exactly as I remembered. Soft, a little hoarse, a little nervous sounding. F. Alid? Oh, Jesus Christ, I didn't think you'd pick up. A. Oh, sorry. F. No, don't apologise. I'm just... It's so, so good to hear your voice. A. Oh. What was I going to say? This might be the only chance I had. F. So, how are you doing? How's university? A. It's fine. F. Good, that's good. A. It's quite a lot of work. He chuckled. I wondered how much he was still keeping from me. F. But you're doing okay. A. There was a long pause, and I could hear my own heartbeat. A. You know, it's tough. I'm finding it a bit hard. F. Yeah? A. I think lots of people are too, though. There was something weird about his voice. F. Alid, you can tell me if you're not feeling too great. I know we don't really talk anymore, but I still really, like, care about you. I know you might still hate me, and I don't know what you really think about me, and I know you don't want me to just keep saying sorry. But I do. I do care about you. That was why I called you in the first place. A. Yeah. I thought you said you were scared of calling people on the phone. F. I was never scared of calling you on the phone. He didn't say anything to that. F. I went to your house today to see if you were there. A. Did you? Why? F. I wanted to talk to you. You haven't been answering my messages. A. Sorry. I've been finding it a bit difficult to... His voice faded out into nothing, and I had no idea what he was trying to say. F. Well, your mum. I spoke to your mum. She's rearranged your bedroom. She's painted over the ceiling and stuff. A. Has she? F. Yeah. But I saved a load of your stuff. I convinced her I'd use it all instead of it getting thrown out. There was a silence. F. Alid? You still there? A. Wait. So she just threw out everything? F. Yeah, but I saved loads of it. I mean, I don't know if I got all of it, but I did save some of it. A. Blank. F. Why would she do something like that? Without your permission? A. That's... F. Blank. A. Don't worry. I had no idea what to say. A. Mum's always been like this. It doesn't surprise me anymore. It doesn't surprise me at all. F. Are you going to come home for Christmas? A. I don't know. F. You could stay at my house if you like. I was almost certain he would say no, but then he didn't. A. Aren't you... Would your family mind? F. No, not at all. You know my mum, and my grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins are all very loud and friendly, and we'll just tell them you're my boyfriend. A. Okay. That'd be... Yeah, that'd be really good. Thank you. F. That's okay. He'd forgiven me. He didn't hate me. He didn't hate me. F. What are you doing awake at this time anyway? A. I'm just trying to write an essay. I had to get my deadline extended. There was a long pause. F. Oh, that sounds dull. A. Yeah. I suddenly heard him breathe in quite hard. I wondered whether he had a cold. F. It's quite late to be writing an essay. A. Pause. Yeah. Another excruciatingly long pause. F. Is it going okay? A. Well, not really. When he next spoke, his voice was wobbling, and that's when I realized he was crying. A. I just... Really, I don't want to write it. I've just been staring at the screen like all day. F. Blank. A. I don't want to do this anymore. F. Alit. It's way too late to be writing an essay. Just go to sleep and write it in the morning. A. I can't. It's... My deadline's at 10 a.m. tomorrow. F. Alid, this is why you don't save essays for the night before. He didn't say anything to that at first. I heard him take in another shaky breath. A. Yeah. F. Blank. A. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry. I shouldn't have... Yeah. F. It's okay. A. I'll see you later. He hung up before I could stop him. I looked at my phone. The time was 3:54 a.m. Burning. Holy shit! Your hair! Alid got off the train on the evening of December 23rd, with a suitcase in one hand and a rucksack on his back. His hair was shoulder length. It was also pastel pink at the ends. He was wearing black skinny jeans, a beige corduroy coat with fleece lining, and lime green plimsolls with purple laces. and he had earphones in his ears. I was wearing my giant Topman coat, grid print leggings, and Star Wars Vans. He smiled at me. It was a little awkward, but it was a smile. "Do you think it looks okay?" "It looks rad as hell." I stood in front of him for a few seconds, just gazing at him, before he took his earphones out. I could hear what he'd been listening to. "Innocence" by Nero. I'd introduced him to Nero. "You're playing your music too loud," I said, before he could say anything else. He blinked and then smiled a little. "I know." We walked back into the village and chatted about trivial things. His train journey, Christmas, the weather. I didn't mind. I knew we couldn't immediately go back to the way things were before. I was just thankful to have him here. We got to my house and Mum welcomed him in with the offer of a cup of tea. But Alid shook his head. "I'm going to go and talk to my mum," he said. "Explain to her I'm staying here for Christmas." I blinked. I assumed she knew already. "No, I think this is something I have to explain in person." He dropped his rucksack onto the floor in the hallway and leaned his suitcase against the wall. "I'll probably only be 10 minutes or so," he said. I didn't believe him. After he'd been gone for half an hour, I was starting to panic. So was Mum. "Do you think I should go over there?" asked Mum. We were standing at the lounge window watching Alid's house, waiting for any sign of movement. Maybe it would help if I spoke to her. Most adults prefer listening to other adults. And then we heard Alid scream. It wasn't really a scream. It was more of a long wail. I'd never heard anyone sound like that in real life before. I pelted to our front door and opened it, just as Alid opened his and stumbled out of it. I ran to meet him, and he was staggering, and for a minute I thought he was injured. But I couldn't see anything physically wrong with him, except the fact that his face was contorted because he was sobbing uncontrollably. And I caught him in my arms just as he sank to the ground on the curb, making the most painful noises I'd ever heard. Like he'd been shot. Like he was dying. Then he started to cry out. "No, no, 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 no!" The tears falling continuously from his eyes. And I started to ask him frantically what it was. What had happened? What had she done? But he just shook his head over and over and choked like he couldn't form any words, even if he wanted to. And then I heard it. She killed him. She killed him. I felt like I was going to be sick. Who? What happened? Tell me. My dog Brian. And then he started to sob again, so loudly, like he'd never cried before in his whole life. I stayed very still. She killed your dog. She said she couldn't look after him because I was gone and he was getting old. So she went and had him put down. No. He let out another wail and pressed his face into my jumper. I didn't want to believe anyone was capable of doing something like that. But we were sitting under the street lamps, and Alid was shaking in my arms. And this was real. This was happening. She was taking everything Alid had and burning it. She was burning him, slowly, until he died. rusty northern hands. "I'll call the police on her," said Mum for the fourth time. We'd been sitting in the lounge for over half an hour. "At least let me go and shout at her." "It won't do anything," said Alid. He sounded like he wanted to die. "What can we do?" I asked. "There must be something." "No." He stood up from the sofa. "I'm going back to uni." "What?" I stood up too and followed him out of the door. "Wait, you can't spend Christmas up there alone." "I don't want to be near her." We were all silent for a moment. "You know," he continued, "when me and Karis were 10, our mum burned a load of clothes Karis bought from a charity shop. Karis was really, really excited about these trousers she'd bought when she went out with her friends. They were made out of this galaxy pattern fabric. But our mum said they were trashy, and she just took them and burned them in the garden while Karis was just screaming and crying. Karis tried to get them out of the fire and burned her hands. And Mum didn't even comfort her." His eyes were vacant, like there was nothing there. I had to hold her hands under the cold tap. "Jesus Christ," I said. Alid looked down and his voice quietened. "She could have just thrown them away. But she chose to burn them." Me and Mum spent another 15 minutes trying to persuade him to change his mind about leaving. But he wouldn't. He was leaving. Again. It was almost 9 p.m. when Alid and I made it back to the station. And though I'd only met him 2 hours earlier, it felt like days ago. We sat on a bench together. The countryside stretched out opposite us, the winter sky black and bleak. Alid lifted up his legs so his knees were bent and his feet tucked up on the bench. He started fiddling with his hands. "It's really cold up north," he said, and then he held out his hands in front of me. The skin of his knuckles was all dry. "Look. Rusty northern hands," I said. "What?" "That's what my mum calls it." I stroked the dry skin of his knuckles with one finger. "When the skin on your hands gets all dry? Rusty northern hands?" Alid smiled. "I think I need to buy some gloves. I'd wear them all the time." "Like radio?" "In university, radio never takes their gloves off. No one knows why." "Yeah." He took his hand back and wrapped his arms around his knees. "Sometimes I think I am radio." "Do you want my gloves?" I said, suddenly, taking mine off. They were navy and had a Fair Isle pattern on the back. I held them out to him. "I've got loads of gloves." He looked at me. "I can't steal yours." "These are really old anyway." This was true. "Francis, if I take those, I'll feel really bad about wearing them." He really wasn't going to take them. I shrugged and said, "Fine," and put them back on. We sat in silence for a minute before he said, "Sorry I didn't reply to any of your messages." "It's fine. You had the right to be angry at me." There was another pause. I wanted to know everything that he'd done at uni. I wanted to ask him to tell me everything I didn't know about Universe City. I wanted to tell him how shitty school was these days, how I was so sleep-deprived that I'd started getting headaches every single day. "How are you?" he said. I looked at him. "I'm fine." And he knew I wasn't. and he wasn't either. But I didn't know what else to say. "How's school?" he asked. "Just can't wait to get out," I said. "But also, I'm trying to enjoy it." "You're not one of those people who's determined to lose their virginity before they go to uni, are you?" I frowned. "Is anyone actually like that?" He shrugged. "Not that I've ever seen." I laughed. "So you're keeping on top of your work, okay?" he asked. I couldn't lie to him. "Not really. A lot of sleepless nights, I guess." He smiled and looked away. "Sometimes I think we're the same person. But we just got accidentally split into two before we were born."
"Why?"
"Because you're literally me, but with all of the trash cleared away." I snorted. "Under the trash, there's just more trash. We're trash to the bone." "Ah," he said. "The title of my debut rap album." We both laughed at that. Our laughs echoed around the station. And then a voice sounded above our heads. "The next train to arrive at Platform 1 will be the 2107 to London St Pancras." "Oh," said Alid. He didn't show any sign of moving. I leaned over and hugged him. Hugged him properly, arms tight around his neck, my chin tucked over his shoulder. He hugged me back too. And I think we were okay. "Are there people up there you can spend Christmas with?" I said. He paused. "Yeah, I think there are some international students staying." And then his train arrived, and he stood up and took hold of his suitcase and opened the door and stepped on the train. He turned back and waved, and I said, "Bon voyage!" And he smiled sadly and said, "Francis, you really are..." But he didn't seem to be able to finish his sentence, and I had no idea what he was attempting to say. He put his earphones in, and the door shut, and he walked away from the window, and I couldn't see him anymore. When the train started to roll away again, I thought about jumping up from the bench and running along and waving at him through the window, like people do in movies. Then I thought about how stupid that would look, and how pointless that would be. So instead I just sat there, on the bench, and waited until the train had gone. And then it was just me, and the countryside again. Me and the fields, and the grey. My friend. I'd kissed Caris last the day before she ran away, and she'd hated it, and hated me, and then she'd left, and it was my fault. It happened on GCSE results day, my year 10 one, and her year 11 one. She came round my house that evening to celebrate, or in her case, commiserate, because she had failed everything. She had failed every single exam she'd taken. I sat on the sofa with bags of unopened crisps and bottles of fizzy drinks, unused celebratory food and drink, and watched her rant about it on the other sofa. "You know what? I don't even care anymore. I literally do not care. So what's going to happen? I'll just have to repeat year 11. No one can do anything about it. And if I fail again, then so what? I'll get a job somewhere that doesn't care about grades. I might be stupid, but there are loads of things I can do. My mum's such a bitch. What does she expect? Like, I'm not my brother. I'm not the fucking golden child. What did she expect? She went on like this for a while. When she started crying, I moved over to the sofa where she was sat and put my arm around her. I'm not useless. I can do stuff. Grades, they're just letters. So what if I can't remember trigonometry and stuff about Hitler and photosynthesis and shit? She looked at me, her mascara just black smears under her eyes. I'm not useless, am I? No, I said, barely more than a whisper. Then I leaned in and kissed her. To be honest, I don't really want to talk about it. I cringe just thinking about it. She stood up almost immediately. There was a moment of unbearable silence, like neither of us could quite believe it had happened. And then she started screaming at me. I thought you were my friend, came up several times. Nobody cares about me, too. You were just pretending this whole time, was probably the thing that hurt the most. I hadn't been pretending. She was my friend and I cared about her. And I hadn't been pretending about any of that. She ran away from home the next day. Within a day, she'd blocked me on Facebook and deleted her Twitter. Within a week, she'd changed her phone number. Within a month, I thought I might be over it. But in reality, I've never been over it. I might not have a crush on her anymore, but that doesn't mean it never happened. And it will always be my fault that Karis last ran away. Skull. Do you want me to leave the room? Asked Mum. I can leave if that'd make you feel better. Nothing is going to make me feel better, I said. It was January. It was the day. We were standing on opposite sides of our kitchen counter, and I had an envelope in my hands, and inside the envelope was a letter that would inform me whether I'd got into the University of Cambridge. Okay, I'm going in the other room, I said, changing my mind. I walked into the living room with the letter and sat down on the sofa. My heart was pounding, and my hands were shaking, and I was sweating everywhere. I was trying not to think about the fact that if I hadn't got in, I had wasted a strong percentage of my life. Almost everything that I'd done at school had been done with Oxbridge in mind. I'd chosen my A-level subjects for Oxbridge. I'd become head girl for Oxbridge. I'd continuously got amazing grades for Oxbridge. I opened the envelope and read the first paragraph. It took one sentence for me to start crying. It took two for me to make a sort of screeching sound in the back of my throat. I didn't read any more than that. I didn't need to. I hadn't got in. Mum came and held me while I cried. I wanted to punch myself. I wanted to punch myself until my skull cracked. It's okay, shh, you'll be okay, Mum kept saying, rocking me slightly like I was a baby again. But it wasn't going to be okay. I wasn't going to be okay. When I told her this, or sobbed it, she said, okay, well, you're allowed to be upset about it. You're allowed to cry about it today. Which I did. They don't know what they're doing, Mum muttered after a little while, stroking my hair. You're the cleverest person in the school. You're the best person in the world. Fuck you all. To say that I was extremely upset about it is a major understatement. I'd known that my interviews were awful, but some small part of me had still hoped that I'd get in. This was the first lot of shock and disappointment. And then, by the time Mum and I had ordered pizza and watched Back to the Future, I was angry at myself for expecting to get in, which was the second. By the time I was lying awake at 3 a.m, I hated myself for being a privileged twat. Who cried because they didn't get into one university out of the 5 they applied to? Some people cried from happiness because they got into one university. The numerous, oh my God, I got a place at Cambridge/Oxford, university, smiley face, Facebook statuses that popped up throughout the day were not helping, particularly when they were from people who always did worse than me in exams. Though, when I saw that Daniel Jung had posted one, I did feel a slight bit of joy that he'd got in. He deserved it. Daniel Jung, 4 hours. Accepted into the University of Cambridge to study natural sciences. Couldn't be happier. Kiss. 106 people liked this. He'd worked himself to death. It wasn't like he had anyone cheering him on. He honestly deserved this. And I liked him, I guess. I really did like him now. But would you let me have a really selfish moment? I'd done literally everything. I'd read an outrageous amount of books. I'd been preparing for this for an entire year. I was the cleverest girl in the class. I had been since I knew what it meant to be clever. And Cambridge was where clever people went. And I still hadn't got in. Everything had been for nothing. I'm sure you think I was complaining about nothing. You probably think I'm a whiny teenager. And yeah, it was all in my head. Probably. That doesn't mean it wasn't real. So fuck you all.